From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. As unemployment benefits for millions of Americans expire in the midst of a pandemic-related economic collapse, House Democrats and Senate Republicans remain far apart on a new COVID relief bill. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin has made it clear that he opposes American workers getting paid the equivalent of $15 an hour in jobless benefits. He and others have backed another round of $1,200 stimulus checks instead. President Trump, who has tried to insist on payroll tax cuts, has threatened to take unilateral action if Congress cannot agree on a bill. Meanwhile, the U.S. Postal Service, which Americans are increasingly relying on during the pandemic, is being turned from a government-run benefit into a corporate business model. The new Trump-appointed postmaster has demanded that postal workers delay delivery in order to keep their job schedules on track. Many worry that the new policy is aimed at undermining vote-by-mail efforts. My guest is Sarah Anderson, director of the Global Economy Project and co-director of inequality.org at the Institute for Policy Studies. Welcome to the program, Sarah.
Thanks for having me.
Before we get to the Postal Service, let's talk about the COVID relief bill. Jobless benefits expired at the end of July, and then senators went on a three-day weekend. What does that mean for the millions of Americans who have been counting on getting a check of about $600 a week and who now don't know where their next check is coming from or when it's coming?
Yeah, it's unbelievable that they are dragging their feet in these negotiations. They're still totally at loggerheads with the Democrats insisting on continuing this $600 per week extra unemployment benefits. And the Republicans opposing that, claiming that it would discourage people or disincentivize people from going back to work. And that's just ridiculous, because how do you incentivize people to go back to work when there are no jobs? There's 30 million people unemployed right now. And what we should be focusing on is making sure that everyone has their basic needs met during this pandemic and that we lay the foundation for a recovery. But Republicans are really balking at all kinds of things that are just so critical right now. You mentioned the support for state and local governments. They're against expanded food assistance. They're against extending the moratorium on evictions. And it's just really a scary time for so many American families who are struggling right now.
I mean, it's strange, because if all of those things were important to pass at a time when the pandemic wasn't even at the dire level that it is now, how is it now less important to have an eviction moratorium, have $600 in jobless benefits, when the pandemic is actually worse?
It doesn't make any sense. I think they are in denial about the severity of the problem. And there are also Republicans who are raising alarm bells about the size of the deficit. And everything from past crises shows that if you start trying to cut your deficit in the middle of a crisis like this, it just prolongs the suffering. What we need right now is really a massive spending and investment plan. That's what's going to get this country back on its feet. And the Economic Policy Institute, for example, said that those $600 payments have been supporting 5 million jobs, because people are taking that money and spending it on basic needs and circulating it in the economy. We cut those extra unemployment benefits and the whole economy is going to suffer.
Right. People actually had a little spending money. And for those Americans who were before they lost their jobs earning less than $15 an hour, actually had more money in their pockets, spent it on things that they needed, or even, you know, non-necessities, thereby propping up the economy. There was a Yale study showing the benefits of those unemployment checks. And to me, it seems bizarre that they would raise this issue of a government deficit when that was never an issue, say, when the tax reform bill was passed into law, when we knew that the government was going to go into deficit. All of a sudden, Republicans and deficit hawks bring up this issue when it comes time to putting money into the hands of Americans, tax money into the hands of Americans.
Exactly. It never comes up when they're talking about the Pentagon budget. It never comes up when they're talking about tax breaks for the wealthy. And there are some of those in the Republican proposal, for example, a tax loophole that the restaurant industry has been pushing for a long time that would let high-powered executives fully deduct their three martini lunches. Somehow that got slipped in there, but not expanded food assistance for families to prevent them from being hungry. So it's saying a lot, and it's particularly hard to take the lecturing from Treasury Secretary Mnuchin, also known as the foreclosure king, for his role during the 2008 financial crisis, and to have him lecturing people about not being properly incentivized to go back to work.
Right. Now, for those people who want to see Trump win another election, shouldn't this also be a no-brainer? And for Trump himself, if the $600 in benefits continue and the economy remains buoyed, he can actually make a stronger claim about improving the economy than if he were to have those benefits be cut and the economy continue its downward spiral.
Yeah, he's all over the place. He will say some populist things, and then in the next breath, he'll support policies that would really benefit the wealthy. I think he's trying to figure out what the message of his campaign is right now. You know, on top of the mixed messages around the health impacts of this crisis as well, which are so related to the economic factors. As long as we continue to deny the extreme, health impacts of the crisis, the longer the economic crisis is going to last. And so, you know, he's, depending on the day or the time of day, he's changing his tune about that. But
you're right. I apologize for asking you to make sense of his words.
You can see I'm kind of stuttering and stumbling around here, but it should be so clear. 30 million Americans unemployed. That is just astounding. And as you mentioned at the top of the program, the fact that senators went and took a three-day weekend instead of finishing these negotiations in a way that would help support an equitable response to this horrific crisis is just really astounding.
One of the things that Trump has said, again, this is us trying to make sense of something that a president who doesn't quite understand much of anything says, but he's wanted a payroll tax cut. You have to have a payroll, first of all, in order to have a payroll tax cut, right? So any kind of a payroll tax cut would have no bearing on unemployed Americans, but that is basically a backdoor toward cutting Social Security and Medicare, something he has promised he would never, never touch. So I suppose they think that talking about it in terms of payroll tax cuts is some sort of euphemism that he hopes we wouldn't realize.
It's such a stupid idea. First of all, as you mentioned, it would give a bit of a tax break to people who are already employed instead of the tens of millions of people who've lost their jobs. So we need to be targeting assistance to the people who need it the most. And then secondly, as you mentioned, the payroll tax cut, which is paid divided between employers and employees, both contribute, and a bunch of that money goes to support Social Security and Medicare. And so why would you be making a tax reform right now that could undercut Social Security and Medicare, two of the most popular programs in the country across the political spectrum? Fortunately for now, Republican leaders in the Congress have rejected this idea of a payroll tax cut. But like many really awful ideas, you never know when it might pop up again. So people should be on the watch for that.
There is a sense that, Trump is claiming that he could just take unilateral action, that he could, through executive order, push through a federal payroll tax holiday, which would basically delay Americans, the payroll taxes being taken out of their paychecks. They would still be on the hook to pay for it a year later, but the strategy apparently is that in the meantime, Trump would then try to push through a bill to make that a permanent cut, which is so sly, because of course, if you put more money into people's paychecks and then say, now you have to pay it back unless we pass this bill, I mean, that's blackmail.
Right. Let's hope that we can put that in the same category as his musing about postponing the election. I'm not a lawyer, but I'm hoping that other forces will prevail to stop him from taking executive action on that.
What about states' aid? That's one of the things that House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has been pushing for. There was a new study by the Urban Institute that showed states are likely to lose something like $200 billion in revenue because of course, the tax base just shrinking horrendously. And this means cuts to all manner of state-funded programs.
Absolutely. It's really terrifying to think about what this could do to the state of schools and libraries and so many other public services that are funded through the state and local levels. The Democrats' proposal for the stimulus package has a lot of money in there for state and local governments with strong support from Republican governors, as you can imagine. But the Republicans have not put that in their version of it. Many people say that there are Republicans in the Senate who've long been angling to push austerity and really slash and burn the budgets of state governments. And it's just insane that they would be doing this in the middle of a crisis.
There is also the issue of the $1,200 stimulus checks. Now, there was one round of stimulus checks, although I understand that they haven't even all been sent out. There was troubles getting those checks out. They want to do another round of those checks. First of all, what do you know about whether there is agreement on those checks? And second of all, whether the stimulus checks had as much of an economic impact in terms of stimulating the economy as the $600 a week jobless benefits did?
As I understand it, there seems to be some agreement on the $1,200 amount for tax filers. I think there's still some disagreement on how much you can get for dependents. I think the Democrats are holding out for more and Republicans want less. But that does seem to be an area where there's some agreement. And I think the Republicans are banking on people getting this check in the mail and having that be, you know, something that boosts their spirits for a time. But when so many people are without jobs, facing homelessness, facing hunger, I can't imagine that $1,200 is going to go that far to really change their view about the role of Congress in addressing this this crisis. It's nowhere near on the scale of the support that's needed.
Steven Mnuchin has supported the $1,200 stimulus check and also talked about some kind of bonus for people who go back to work. He seems very, very eager that Americans return to their low-paying jobs rather than seeing the jobless benefits as incentive for employers to raise their wages. It also, I imagine there's some ideological opposition because if there's money for these jobless benefits, then there's money for Medicare for All. There should be money for the Green New Deal. There should be money for so many other social programs, for boosting education funding. And it seems as though that opposition to a benefit that's ongoing is something that is more ideological than practical. Let's talk about the U.S. Postal Service. I know that's an issue that you have studied. That's one of your expertises. There was the Postal Service had been in financial trouble by design and was recently given a loan that it had to wait a really long time for. Tell me about the terms of this loan and what it means for the future of the Postal Service.
Well, as background, the loan was negotiated by Mnuchin, who we've already discussed, and the new Postmaster General, who is the head of the U.S. Postal Service. He is a friend of Trump's. He's a major Republican donor, a businessman, and he came in and very quickly cut this deal with Mnuchin for $10 billion in extra debt for the post office, which is not what they need. They have been demanding, and the postal workers' unions have been demanding, the same kind of direct cash assistance that so many big corporations have gotten. Over $100 billion in federal government cash assistance has gone to big companies and hospitals, universities. The airline companies alone got $25 billion in cash. So this $10 billion loan is not what is going to help put the Postal Service on a sound financial footing to make sure that they can keep providing essential services during this crisis, delivering food and medicine and other things people really need. And the other thing that the new Postmaster General did very quickly after coming into office in June is introduce some operational changes, cutting overtime pay, cutting the transportation costs by not allowing deliverers to return multiple times to pick up packages. And this is all insane. His approach to the financial challenges of a historic pandemic is to cut a service when we need it more than we ever have. And he's fixated on overtime pay, which has increased, but not because postal workers are trying to pad their paychecks. It's increased because there's a staffing shortage, because people are sick from the COVID-19. The Postal Workers Union says as many as 3,000 of their workers have tested positive. As many as 25,000 have been quarantined because they've been exposed to it by others in the workplace. The rural letter carriers say that as many as as much as 20% of their letter carriers have been unable to work because either they're sick or they have to take care of family members. And so other, you know, staff are having to try to fill in, but the mail has been slowed down as a result of this, and the Postmaster General knew that that would happen. Also, the transportation, not being able to go back and make multiple trips to deal with the package boom, which has been happening. And so all of this is undercutting the service when we need it most, and right at the same time when President Trump is being very critical of vote by mail. And so the new rules that are forcing the postal workers to leave mail behind, to deliver it late, that's all going to feed into this narrative that the Postal Service can't handle vote by mail. And it's just terrifying, because if we don't have vote by mail, we do not have democracy in the year 2020. There's no other entity that can handle vote by mail than the Postal Service. And so this is really a direct threat to our democracy, and all the more reason why in these stimulus negotiations we've been talking about, they need to come through with a kind of direct assistance to both keep the Postal Service providing these essential services, but also strengthen their capacity to handle vote by mail.
The new Postmaster General is a Trump donor. There is a sense that he is basically trying to turn the Postal Service into a corporatized, corporate-style model. I mean, this seems to, again, be an ideological battle. I mean, the Postal Service is a public benefit, right? This is something that we basically, it's a necessity that we rely on. And Trump has railed since the start of his presidency that the Postal Service charges too little. The interpretation of that that's pretty obvious is that he thinks Americans, the public, is paying too little for this service. He wants to raise prices on Americans. You know, he'll rail about drug prices being too high, but if postal service prices go up, that affects Americans, right? So it seems as though they hate this idea of a service that is within the government working well for the people, and they want to undermine it, defund it, and destroy it.
And it's a service that is providing decent jobs with benefits to over 600,000 people, 40% of whom are people of color. Wow. So it has long been a rare path to the middle class, particularly for African Americans in this country. And there are people who just can't stand the idea of a public service that's creating decent jobs, even though, of course, those jobs are supporting communities across this country. And yes, it is not the U.S. Postal Corporation, it's the Postal Service. And they are doing an amazing job of handling the spike in packages as more and more people want food and medicine, other things delivered to their homes. But they are being undercut now from within. I still hope the Postmaster General will see the bigger social mission here of of this agency. But right now, what he has been doing is really undercutting it. It's like having the fox in the hen house.
Sarah, can the damage that Trump has done to the Postal Service be undone in a new administration? I imagine that with a new Postmaster General, some of those issues around overtime could easily be reversed, but the loan doesn't seem to be something that could be easily reversed.
Well, hopefully they won't need the loan if they can get direct aid through the stimulus package. And there's a big fight over that. The Postal Workers Union has generated tens of thousands of calls to the Senate. There's a really big effort right now to get this through. But the other thing, you kind of hinted at this in the beginning when you said that they've been, that they're right now in a pandemic-related financial crisis because mail revenue has been going down a lot because of the recession. But before that, they were facing financial challenges that were manufactured by Congress because in 2006, Congress passed this ridiculous mandate requiring the Postal Service to prepay their retiree health benefits more than 50 years in advance. No other private corporation or government agency has to do that. It's one more way to sort of weaken this really vital public service. And so there was a bill in the House that had a lot of bipartisan support to repeal that crazy health funding mandate. And I think that, hopefully we could get something that through. The thing about the Postal Service is that Republicans really care about it. Ordinary Republicans really care about it because so many of that, they really dominate in rural areas. And so there was a poll recently that showed that 90% of Republicans and 96% of Democrats want postal crisis relief. And so it's one area where we can at least hope that there should be some bipartisan support. But they will have to stand up to the president on this. Republicans in the Senate have to stand up to Trump and demand that we defend the public postal service.
You know, they've gone after Democratic-run institutions, states, cities, but the Postal Service serves all Americans. The Postal Service is going to ensure that Democrats and Republicans can vote by mail, ensures delivery of goods to Democrats and Republicans. Don't Republicans worry that their base will be upset about these attacks, or they've just, I guess, succeeded in propaganda so effectively?
They better. Those rural red communities need the Postal Service so much more than urban areas because private companies have no interest in delivering to far-flung places. UPS and FedEx already charge extra to addresses where 70 million people live. Without competition from the public postal service, the rates to those areas would go through the roof, or they just wouldn't get delivery service at all. The Postal Service has a universal service obligation. So they take money from their more lucrative parts of their business and use it to cover the costs of deliveries to small towns and rural areas and tribal communities and Alaska and islands and everywhere, because the Postal Service is supposed to help unite our country, bind it together. And we've never needed that kind of interconnection more than we do right now.
Right. Well, I want to thank you so much, Sarah, for joining us today. Is inequality.org the best place to read your work?
Yes, absolutely. We have a whole section, a top right corner you can click to get all our research on the Postal Service. And otherwise, there's tons of facts and figures about inequality under COVID and things that people can do.
So, again, that's inequality.org. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
My guest has been Sarah Anderson, director of the Global Economy Project, co-editor of inequality.org at the Institute for Policy Studies. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.